This is my wife. Her name's Mariana. She is from Colombia, but not like Colombia right down the road, Colombia, South America. So she is quite a ways away from home, but she's learning to fall in love with Missouri very, very slowly. Actually, her mom's coming this week, so we're really excited about that, coming from Colombia. So we've been married about 5 months, so pray for her. She's figuring out who I am, and it's scary for all of us. This is a picture of a bunch of people I went to college with. I picked it because I think we look great in the laser tag gear. I went to a place called Heartland Christian College, so I got a degree in biblical studies there, and that's where I met my wife, and we dated, and we got married there. I have this picture of me in high school with my basketball team, mainly, I don't know, just to embarrass myself. You probably can't tell which one's me. I'm the little guy in the back without the beard and like 6 years younger, so it doesn't tell much. And then I picked this picture right here at the end. Again, it's my wife. I just think she looks really happy. I think she looks really cute in that picture. So the funny thing about this picture, this is bubble soccer. I don't know if you guys have seen these videos. You get in a large inflatable bubble. Way more about knocking people over than it is actually scoring goals. But the first time I went to meet her family, this is what we were doing. So this is actually in Colombia. I think I lost a lot of points playing bubble soccer because I was just trying to launch people and it didn't work. So, even though I'm a little scared after Jackson's questions, y'all can ask 3 questions about me too, I suppose.
Northeast Missouri?
I'm not. Actually, I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts. So, but I've lived in Kirtland. Everybody's like, oh, he's from the city. No. I grew up in Kirksville, Missouri, since I was 5 years old, though. So I'm definitely a Missouri boy through and through.
You just said Boston because it sounds
good. Yeah, Boston sounds pretty good. I don't like lobster. I like mashed potatoes. So that's kind of where I fall from that.
So. That's amazing.
If there's nothing else, you'll know.
Yeah, what got you into this line of work?
Okay, so when I was in high school, I was not a great kid. So I was kind of one of those kids that got suspended, was in and out of school a lot. And I just remember having teachers and having people that worked at my school, like they really poured a lot into me and kept me on the right track. So when I had the chance and I was looking around for jobs, I'd actually had Pure Freedom, our program, as a student. So I've kind of been on both sides of it. I just remember how much those topics meant, and so I just wanted the opportunity to kind of pour back into people my age, or the age I was at the time. So I'm 22 now, so a little bit older.
What's the story you enjoy telling?
I do like telling this story about bubble soccer. It feels bad, it makes me sound like a monster, but we were playing, and all week I had been trying to do like all these things to make a good impression on the family, you know, because I want them to like me. And I don't speak the language, so it's this whole added layer of like I'm cutting grass, trying to grill for them, doing things that I don't normally do at my own house. But it was working, like they really liked me. And then we played bubble soccer, and when I launched somebody, they kind of popped out of the bubble and fell on the ground. They only cried for a little bit, they don't start back up, they were fun. But yeah, I do enjoy telling that story, even though I'm kind of the bad guy. All right, I'll turn you guys back over to Jackson.
So what this presentation will be today is we've adapted a little bit our level 2 day 1 curriculum for high school. And so we think it fits the format, and it really does communicate some perspectives for the root of some of the issues that we see. So some of this will seem a little high school-y, but also part of that's built into the nature of what we're trying to communicate to. Whether some of you have abstinence programs or sexual risk avoidance programs, so maybe pick up on a few things here too. Yeah?
Just needed to hear you better.
Okay. I will come speak from right here. I'll try and speak loud.
Thank you.
We'll talk about this at the end. Okay, raise your hand if you know what Instagram is. That's not a question I ask. These are the top 6 people that have the most followers on Instagram. Okay, so Instagram is all over the world. These people have the most followers. I want you to guess what their top post is. So what does it look like? Describe what you think the picture might be. So for Cristiano Ronaldo, what do you think his top picture is?
Probably doesn't have a shirt on.
Okay, he's probably not wearing a shirt. First of all, he's a soccer player. He's more famous probably in other countries too, if you don't know who he is. What else do you think might be in his picture?
Hot chick.
Okay, someone that's hot or attractive, you know, a wife or a girlfriend. Maybe a selfie. Okay, what about The Rock?
Probably also
no shirtless. Shirtless,
workout.
Something about a workout. Did someone say a movie scene, maybe?
Flexing.
Oh, flexing, yes.
But also movie scene.
Yeah, movie scene could be.
You get excited about that.
Yeah. Something about his kids?
Yeah.
Okay. What about Ariana Grande?
Music.
Something about music. Be more specific.
Dancing
video. Okay, dancing video. Just inspiration. And then what did someone say from the back?
Oh, I think something sexy probably.
Yeah. Okay, something sexy. What about Kylie Jenner?
Makeup,
something sexy. The students usually guess like she's probably not wearing very many clothes.
Yeah,
or the kind of clothes. Okay, yeah. What about Lionel Messi? He's a soccer player. More famous than other countries. What do you think his top clothes is like?
Probably a soccer ball.
Okay, maybe with a soccer ball in it. Students sometimes guess to like him scoring a goal, like in the middle of like winning a championship. What about Selena Gomez? What do you think her top post is like? She's a musician too. Same thing. Okay, so to sum up all your guesses, you're saying either something about their body or something about what they do, why they're famous. In the classroom, it's generally the same things. We'll come back to this. I know it's a little bit of a cliffhanger. We'll get back to the answers, okay? Sorry. You have a sheet in front of you that says basic needs of the heart. Find that, yes. There's a little rate yourself scale, but what I want you to do is think about how you feel today. Okay, so I want you to evaluate your heart. Maybe you can do like this week, how overall you're doing this week. Okay, I'll explain the rate yourself scale a little bit more. Someone at a zero might feel something like, I don't matter, I am unloved, I am scared, I am unacceptable, or feeling depressed. Someone out of 10 might feel something like, I am worthy of love, I am making a difference, I belong, I am capable and confident, I am genuinely happy. Okay, this is just a snapshot of where you're at today in this session. Probably no one is all the way up at a 10, and hopefully someone is not at a 0, but we're all likely somewhere in between. So scribble in to wherever you feel like you're at. I'm not going to ask you for your answers. I just want you to scribble in on that heart, wherever you feel like your heart is at today.
You want to move on?
Yes. Also, I just can't say so.
I usually place my water bottle like on a random desk. Actually, probably this year, somebody, I'm like, where do I need my remote? And, like some kid in the back.
Okay, so imagine your heart is like a gas tank. This is the metaphor here. If it is empty, it can be hard to feel love from this place or to love or care for others from a place of emptiness. Okay? But if someone's tank is full, they're actually more able to receive love and give love to others. Identify the gap space between where you're at and 10. So look at the space at the top. Wherever you're at in 10, identify that gap space, okay? Most people will have some sort of gap space at the top of where they're at on most days. That space matters. It's actually the space that we're going to be focusing on today. Gap space at the top. What do you think, or where do you think your average client would rate their heart when they come in for an appointment? Think about that for just a second. Okay, now what are examples of things that people do to fill in that gap space in their heart? Okay, someone said sex. Yes. What else?
Drugs,
alcohol, what else?
Video games, selfies.
Video games, selfies. Yeah, can you like likes or attention through that on social media?
Okay, yeah.
So a relationship too? Yeah. Could be a lot of different things, right? sometimes the students will say these answers, like fame or followers on social media, beauty, money, accomplishments. Some people even say food, too. Are those examples healthy or unhealthy? Or is it a mix?
It could be a mix.
Could be a little bit of a mix, right? By and large, a lot of unhealthy examples were stated. At least like all the first ones, right? The first ones are always unhealthy, too.
Okay, so we're going to answer. We're going to give you like mental gold today. Okay, we're going to tell you what the key to happiness is. Some people at Harvard have studied this, what it actually takes to fill in that gap space in someone's heart. I'm going to let Ryan talk to you about that. Yes. Yeah. So this is actually why Jackson brought me, so that I would talk about the boring research and you guys would rate it higher on those evaluations. The good news about this research is actually really cool. I think it's helpful. Some of you might have already heard of this. It's becoming more and more popular. But this was a study that was started in 1938 at Harvard, and it started with 268 sophomores. And what they were trying to do is they wanted to study these people's lives and see what led to, what was the key, again, to that healthy lifestyle, but also happiness, were the two things that they were trying to track. That has become way more than those initial researchers have even thought, because the study's still going today. So this isn't actually an active study that we're talking about. So again, it started with those 268, and they were tracking them in different areas of their life, but also they continued to ask them different questions throughout to try to gauge their happiness. So there would be interviews, there would be surveys, there would be observations and conversations, a variety of things like that. And a variety of these people are still alive today. So there's 268 of those sophomores. One of them became president. Does anybody know who the president is? Yeah, sometimes students don't. Which one's the president, so I gotta help them out a little bit. By and large, they get there, though, so we help them out. So this is actually expanded from those 268 to include their children, which number more than 1,300 now from that original study, and those children are in their 50s and 60s about this time, roughly. Beyond that, they also included 456 inner-city kids from lower-income Boston. So hometown, right? They brought all my people in with me. So they brought them along with those research and their eventual lives too. So they're tracking all these things, and there was a variety of things that they tracked. So they were keeping track of all these things, things like jobs, their physical health, finances, a variety of these things. Again, so they're tracking all these different factors in somebody's life and then trying to observe how happy they are. And they kind of came to a baseline conclusion of one of these being the key to what happiness is. Can you guys take a guess from this list what that might look like? Yeah, so specifically this one right here, quality of relationships. So not even just how many friendships they had or if they were in a romantic relationship, but the key really was the quality of those relationships. And this is a quote from the director of the study at Harvard. It says, good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period. In general, we know this, right? If you ask somebody, what is the most important thing in your life? What are the answers you generally hear?
Your family.
Family, right? Family, those friendships. Those are the students. Students get that right away most of the time. They know that it's their family, their friendships. So what this study really shows is that the things that we value most are what is the key to happiness here, and that's relationships. We also understand this from a biblical perspective, that relationships are a key to happiness. If we were to look all the way back to the beginning in Genesis, it says we are created in the image of God. We can understand that in a lot of ways, and there could probably be a whole session on that. I'm just going to look at one little part. When God was creating Adam, he said, let us create man in our image, us in our. So even we see God in himself is a relationship, expressed through familial terms, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So we see right there, part of us being created in the image of God necessitates that we need relationships. Beyond just this relationship with God, we need relationship to one another as well. And so I really like, especially when we're in schools, obviously we can't necessarily bring scripture into it. But what we see through study and research that we get to bring into class is it begins to point back to the principles that we see in the Bible. Psalms talks about how creation is declaring the works of God and the glory of God. Part of that is this research that we see, where they're studying the creation of God and seeing these principles that come out on it. So that's something that I think is really cool when we're looking at that. How many of you guys are still thinking about that Instagram poll?
All right, I'll turn you guys back over to Jackson to show you the...
By the way, on that research study, so it's been going on for 83 years, right?
Yeah.
1938, which is around the time the Great Depression was coming to an end, so you can see why they're trying to study happiness at that time. It's been going on for 83 years, which that's really cool. There's not many studies that do that. It's a longitudinal study. It's really cool. Okay, so for Ronaldo, you all guessed something with him, with his shirt off. Some of his students guessed like a cologne advertisement or something like that. His picture is actually with him, with one of his mentors from soccer. That is his top post. That's not even a good quality picture. The Rock, you all guessed something about him flexing or something with his shirt off. His top post is one with his wife on his wedding day. Ariana Grande, most people guess something about like a music video or something about like hair or makeup or the way she looks. Her top post is also a picture from her wedding day. Kylie Jenner, most people guess something about like makeup or her body or not wearing very many clothes. It's actually just her thumb in the picture. Notice her baby over thumb. Messi, his is similar to Ronaldo's. This guy, I think, passed away not too long ago, but he was a mentor to him as well. And so to Selena Gomez, most people guess something about like one of her accomplishments in music. Her top post is just a picture with her friends on the beach. Okay, what are all these things about?
Relationships.
Right. So it took people at Harvard around 83 years to concretely say relationships are what make people happy, but what we see rising to the top of the Instagram likes, these people have the most followers. What's at the very top of Instagram is relationships, right? Your guesses were pretty good. Most of The Rock's pictures or posts, they're probably about him working out, right? Or maybe a movie that he's working on. But that's his top post that says something, right? Same thing with Kylie Jenner. That is not what most of her posts look like, okay? But that's her top one that says something. This is kind of like the litmus test for, that kind of proves that Harvard happiness study. This is really cool. And it's something that students can directly engage in and relate to. Something else is going on here that's important to recognize. It's actually the second half of that quote from that director that Ryan just read to you, that he said that good relationships keep us happier and healthier, period. Okay, 83 years, thousands of pages of data, thousands of people being included in this. It's about relationships. But they also found that loneliness kills, that it is as powerful as smoking or alcohol. It's having even physical effects like that on people. By the way, even seeing pictures like this can lead to feelings of loneliness. It's important to recognize that a lot of what's on social media is highlights of people's lives, right? By and large, it's not just the mundane, everyday things that aren't necessarily high or low. So a lot of what people are consuming, that they're looking at, is just the highlights. That can lead to feelings of loneliness. This quote comes from a TED Talk where the current director, in 2016, he was talking about it. He said that the current stats for loneliness in America are 1 in 5. So he was saying that 1 in 5 Americans at any given time could say that they are lonely. We looked this up in our office because I was like, there's no way that that's actually true. 1 in 5? The more recent research from 2019 is saying that's 3 in 5. Which that was done before the virus hit, too, by the way. 3 in 5. The specific stat is 61% of Americans at any given time and say that they are feeling lonely. Think back again to that gap in the heart, in the love tank at the beginning. Maybe some of that gap has to do with loneliness and connection. 3 and 5. Okay, we're going to talk about two perspectives toward the end here. They are connection and consumption. Now, most of what you all identified is what people use to fill in that gap of their love tank. They have to do with this, right? What people go after to fill in that gap in their heart, it's about this, right?
Right.
This is promoted in our culture, right? I'm not saying it's all bad. Consumption's not all bad, right? But industries make money off of this, right? The Amazon and Netflix and Hulu don't give free trial memberships because
they care so much about just taking it out every 3 months free, right? Actually, it makes them money, right? In the long run. In the long run. Again, I'm not saying all that's bad or that that's wrong, but consumption is actually a driving force, and it's really promoted in our culture, and it's not all bad. But
when this idea of consumption is connected to sex and relationships, there's a lot of unhealthy things that come from that. So we will be looking through these two lenses specifically in the topics of sex and relationships. Does that make sense? And that is where this lens of consumption ends up very unhealthy.
Let me get this from you.
Let me make sure I'm on track here. Okay, even the language that we have about sex reflects one of these two perspectives. Have you ever heard baseball terms used to talk about sex?
Yep.
Things like what?
Third base,
first base, second base. Yeah, home runs, scoring. I've heard a lot of answers there. Like any baseball term or role or player that you could think of, there is a sexual connotation with that. So start naming roles of the players or plays or anything like that. Like, you know, like bench warmer. There's so many like sexual connotations that can be taken from baseball terms, right? What is the game of baseball about?
Winning,
right? It's a competition, right?
Right.
So we are connecting sex to something that's about winning or a competition, about scoring more runs more than the other team, faster, right? That's what baseball's about. It's the point of it. Or it's about entertainment, too. These ideas of like competition or winning or just even just like pure entertainment, they're being then connected to sex in the language that we use, right? But there's also language that's used to talk about sex through this other lens here of connection. We've heard of terms like intimacy or making love. That's when people are talking about sex through this lens of connection. So even the language, the way that people talk about sex can reflect one of these two perspectives. Not only that, but our practices or our attitudes can reflect one of these two perspectives. I will ask you the questions that I ask to the students in the class, but I don't need you to answer. I think we're all on the same page here. Get the next page. Hardest part of my job? Separating papers out. Okay, so if someone asks for a sext or a nude photo, is that about connection or consumption? Right? It's about consumption. And then, by the way, like in the classroom, we are bringing up, most of them have already heard about it at this point, but sexting is illegal for anyone under the age of 18. It's considered child pornography at that point, so there's a couple different ways that someone could receive criminal charges for this. We talk about how someone could receive charges for requesting for a photo like this, or taking a photo like this, whether it's of themselves or of another person, or sending a photo like this, or forwarding a photo like this, or saving a photo like this to a device. It would be a charge for possession at that point. There are a lot of laws in our country, especially to protect minors in this. But really, the main point, not only the students know by this point, too, by high school, that it's something that's illegal, but we want to help them see that it's unhealthy, that it's taking sex through this lens of consumption. What about pornography? Which of these lenses does pornography belong to?
Consumption.
Yeah, do you think it increases or decreases connection between people?
Decreases.
Yeah. Also, with both of these sides, there's some other things that are kind of associated with each of these sides. Addiction is associated with the consumption side, and money specifically. Again, they're actually during the pandemic, one of the major porn websites put out a free premium membership. Again, we just talked about what a premium membership is for. It's not because they care so much, right? But it ends up making them money in the long run. By the way, just a side note. In 2013, NBC reported that the pornography industry was making around $97 billion every year. In 2013, that was more money than the NBA, the NFL, and the MLB combined. More recent stats about pornography, they've stopped trying to track the money on it because so much of this is done illegally and they're not really able to track that. But they've connected the amount of data streamed through pornography to like Netflix and Hulu, and it's like newsworthy when Netflix and Hulu have streamed more data than pornography. Meaning that pornography is more popular than Netflix and Hulu on most months. So if for people that walk in your clinic or for students, if you're in schools, like this is more common than I think most people would recognize or maybe even like to admit. So we are bringing this up constantly in classrooms. It's in every curriculum starting from 8th grade. It's in all of our high school curriculums. What about sex just for fun or to feel good, or more about like casual sex? Which of these two perspectives? Consumption, right? Because it's not so much about the relationship at that point. If taken to the extreme, this perspective of consumption leads to sexual abuse. This is why sexual abuse happens. It's because people are viewing sex through this lens of consumption. Okay? That's the simplest way to put it. Sexual abuse happens because people are viewing sex through the lens of consumption. So if you've heard terms like sexual violence, sexual harassment, sexual coercion, all of these things we bring up in a classroom, all of those things, talking about sexual abuse, it's happening because of this lens of consumption. What does consent mean? Does someone agree? Yeah. Most of the time in a classroom they say, like, someone says yes or no, right? It's that simple. Don't you hear me very clearly? Consent by itself is a low standard. Okay? Consent by itself is a low standard. And I wrote this, and I'm going to read it. Because using people as means to an end, so this one of consumption, with mutual consent, with consent, it's legal, right? But when there's no consent, then it's illegal, okay? Again, consent by itself is a low standard. Because we don't just want an absence of assault. We want more than consent. With love and intimacy, romance and friendship, we want to be unafraid of being vulnerable with another person. And so for our students and for our classes, we don't want them to just avoid risk, to just avoid all the bad things that they shouldn't do. We want them to pursue connection, to pursue healthy relationships. That's what I want for them. I'm not there to say, you can't do this, you shouldn't do all these things. I think they can get bogged down with all that. And they know these things too. Like they've been told them. We're not the only ones saying this, right? We want them to pursue connection, healthy relationships. Think about their goals, right? It's like turning from saying, like, oh, I can't do all this stuff over here, to saying, this is the stuff that I really want. I'm going to walk toward this. Rather than I'm walking away from these things, I'm walking toward these healthy things. So just switching the perspective to something that's focused on the positive. So if this really... Or first of all, does this work? This perspective?
No.
Does consumption work?
No.
Doesn't? Yeah.
I mean, it may, but it's not
going to
get you the result you want in the end.
Okay, so not long term, right?
Right.
Temporary, right? Consumption works. Let's be honest. Consumption works, just short term. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So it's distraction, Netflix, binging things, whatever.
It's not happy relationships.
Right,
it doesn't
right.
Create happy relationships.
Right. But I think it's important to recognize, like, this does work just short term, okay? Because it's missing the connection. And by the way, this is so much easier than the hard work that it takes to connect to another person, right? We have so many students that have been hurt that really don't want to be vulnerable. They see that as a weakness, right? And so this is hard work. This is so much easier. But yeah, it only works short term.
Eventually, you keep wanting more and more and more.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This really doesn't ever end, right?
Right.
Yeah, because this quantity just keeps going up. That directly ties into addiction, right? It's like, this is no longer enough anymore. Got to get more. Any questions here before I move on? Any ideas? Thoughts? What's pretty cool is that we see what comes up in the research is that relationship quality actually directly affects sex quality. So the quality of someone's relationship directly affects the quality of their sex life. Now, we still have students that are focusing on, okay, so I need to have a good relationship so I can have a good sex life. It's still kind of backwards in the frame. Does that make sense?
Right.
Where it's like, yes, like, I do want that for you, but... the main point is still the relationships. Does that make sense? But connection directly affects sex quality. That catches their attention usually. But more sexual partners over time decreases future relationship quality, specifically happiness and stability. And delaying sexual involvement is associated with higher relationship quality across several dimensions. So the people that wait longer in their relationship to have sex rate their relationship as having a better overall quality, more stability, better communication, and a better sex life. The study that I'm referencing was brought up in the New York Times by the Journal of Family Psychology, where they asked 2,000 married couples to rate their relationship in four categories. They also asked them, when was the first time that they had sex? What they were finding was that people that waited longer had higher ratings in all four of those categories. The truth is that we really cannot talk about sex without talking about relationships as well. If someone is just trying to use sex through this lens of consumption, it can work short term, but it's not addressing the heart of connections, the things that will really fill up that love thing, or the key taboos that people are already been studying. What I want for all of you, actually, like legit all of you, not just students, but I want people to live closer to that 10 more consistently, right? I think that's what we all want. That starts with this focus of relationships. If you haven't heard someone say in a while, I'm literally like, this isn't my notes, I say this to students, but I'm saying it to you as well, right now, just for you. You are acceptable, you do make a difference, you belong, you are capable, you are worthy of love, believe you're worthy of connection as well. That's why we do that. This message that we have for people, like Ryan was saying, like we find this in scripture, right? It only makes sense, like, if God created us, like, we're going to see what he says, like, coming up in research. And it's pretty cool. Ryan is a lot more inclined to focus on those things than I am, just from his studies, too. But like, I tend to, like, I'm clinging to the research first, and then I get excited. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Everything my parents have been telling me my whole life, everything my pastor has been telling me. God knew it. He made us. It makes sense, right? But this research is so much of what can, it makes a difference for students, especially like, you know, all of our students aren't Christians, don't even believe in God. Some of them have had terrible church experiences too, right? But this research is really, really cool for people that are Christians and not Christians. Like, it's a benefit to everyone. Our mascot for our program is the Etch-A-Sketch. I usually ask the student, how do you use an Etch-A-Sketch? You turn the white wheels white. Yeah. You can draw a picture. One of the wheels controls it vertically, and one of them controls it horizontally. But what do you do if you don't like the picture that's been drawn? You can shake it, and it will start to fade, right? And then you can start to draw a new picture. This statement is true, okay? There's a word called neuroplasticity. Will you say neuroplasticity?
Neuroplasticity.
This is one of my favorite words. Neuroplasticity is why hope just isn't some like great word you can slap on a bad situation. This statement is true because of neuroplasticity. For real, if you have not looked at any research in this, write that word down. Neuroplasticity is really cool. This is the way that you learn new things. Your brain makes new connections. This is why students can learn something at school. Neuroplasticity is why also we can make habits, and when we practice, we get better at things. It's because of neuroplasticity. It's also why people can break habits. This is like our brain making a highway. When you practice something every day, your brain makes a highway pretty much, okay? When you break a habit, your brain blocks off that highway and you gotta learn to make a new one. So your brain's building a new road then. By the way, your brain can also like prune off these things. So like when you stop using a highway, like if that goes unused for long enough, your brain decides to just like prune that stuff off, which is really cool. So this is why people can learn new things. It's why people can overcome pain and hurt and trauma as well. It's all true because of neuroplasticity. That gets me really excited. So if you learn, so what I say to the students is like, if you've learned something today or yesterday, if you learn something tomorrow that makes you think you want to make different decisions in the future, or that you want to have a new conversation with someone, or be vulnerable in a new way, that's not too late to do any of those things because of neuroplasticity. And I've got one on my water bottle.
and especially the junior hires get fired up about it.
Unfortunately, we cannot find any more that still have like a keychain on it. So I've got like one of the only ones like left in our country, I'm convinced.
Okay.
They're not even
going to
know what the Etch-a-Sketch
is. No, right? Well, I'm making sure the people in, the kids in Northeast Missouri, in like 20 counties or however many we're in, like, those kids are going to know what Etch-a-Sketch is. And every time they see it, I hope they think of neuroplasticity. Yeah.
These are the.
I'm sorry, I have a question. So, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, but I think I've heard before. When you have watched pornography, like that first image of pornography can be ingrained in your brain for like forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people can go through recovery and have healing from that, but that image is still like almost like burned there. So how does that go along with the neuroplasticity?
Yeah, so that principle, what you're talking about, she asked about like, so sometimes when people see pornography for the first time, that even after recovery and after if someone's like overcome addiction, that like sometimes that first image is still there. I talk to the students like about these things, and even like trauma just in general, or abuse that can like turn into trauma. Like as like these are sometimes like scars on the skin, like the skin heals, right? But you can still look down and know that something's different or that something happened there. Even in my own story, like, I was abused when I was like 8 to 10 years old by a couple different family members. And so like my story, like that was what I knew sex to be from the very beginning. But so like for real, like when I learned about neuroplasticity, I was like breaking down in the office because it applies to me. And I think similar, like even with my own story, like I have experienced healing with counseling and being vulnerable with friends, and then now that I'm married, like, this is different. Like, just me and my wife have had different, maybe, like, struggles that, like, she's been, I think, frustrated with me at sometimes, but it's like sometimes it can trigger stuff. But, like, healing can happen, but I'm not sure that that the brain, like, can heal itself always in a way that's like it never happened. So I relate to, like, the metaphor of, like, the scars on the skin. Yeah. I do tell students, like, especially the ones that, like, talk to me after class, like, healing happens slowly. Oftentimes, it is very, very slow. Yes. Did that answer your question? This is some of our contact information. So I want to clarify, too, a couple points here. The worksheet that you've got that said Basic Needs of the Heart, at the bottom it should say Center for Relationship Education. We get a curriculum from Real Essentials. They're based in Denver, Colorado. If you have an SRA program or an abstinence education program, really encourage you to look into, there's a couple different companies that actually have quite a bit of curriculum like the stuff that we covered today. Real Essentials has got a lot of great things. And again, you've got in your packet or in that paper, should say Center for Relationship Education. But Real Essentials, they got a lot of good things going on there. They're cool. Yes?
You talked about delaying sex and how that improves the relationship.
Yeah.
Is that specifically delaying within that relationship the amount of time, or just in your lifetime as far as your age?
Both. Yeah. So specifically, the research I was talking about was improving those four variables in that relationship, but actually, so teen sex has only negative long-term outcomes associated with it, okay? There are 14 different documented ways that teen sex can affect a person, and when we talk about these things, just like I was saying, like avoiding risk, we don't just have to be bogged down with like avoiding risk, but all those 14 things, like what makes a difference is the context. So we don't talk about sex is good or bad, but what matters if sex is healthy or unhealthy is context. The best context for sex is within, the CDC defines it as a mutually monogamous long-term relationship. Most people just call that marriage, but it has a lot to do with commitment. We talk through these things in the classroom, but yeah, it's both. Things are better within a relationship if people wait longer and move through the milestones with decision and commitment. But then also overall, just for an individual, outcomes are better if they're waiting longer. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why I mentioned Real Essentials, the Center for Relationship Education. You should contact them, and they will talk to you about a lot of things. They've got so much more than just this, y'all. It's a lot of good stuff. Contact them. Yes, do not copy that. I'll get in trouble.
You said it's a three-day program. Are you in how many hours a day?
So we are there from anywhere from like 3 of the class periods to 7 of the class periods. Okay. So this year, we've actually got our schedule that's changed. This year it's working out really well. That I'm typically teaching 4 high school classes in a day, and then he's teaching the junior high, so it's 3 classes. And so we're covering all the grades in one day there. But yeah, 3-day program. And different, like, I'm sure you know, you all know too, but we've got some programs that we've come in contact with that they're there for 2 weeks or just there for one day. And they just got a 1-day thing that they do, and then they're on to the next school. But yeah, ours is 3 days.
Do you have any difficulty getting into the schools, letting them accept you to come in? Or are they welcoming you? Or
this is
what's the attitude?
So she's asking, do we have difficulty getting into the schools? We're in how many schools? 50-something?
44.
44? Wow. Yeah, that was last year's stats. So 44 schools, 21 counties in Northeast Missouri, 5,400 students. We do not have trouble getting into the schools, except for the private schools. They don't want us to come in as much. Yes.
We actually have a waiting list right now of schools that would like to get us in. That's double digits deep.
We've got contact from schools like in Kansas City and close to St. Louis, but it's just kind of outside our radius too. But the public schools are begging us to come in. The private schools, there's a little bit of hesitancy.
Do you find that that's because of their teen pregnancy rates, or is it just because they're wanting?
So, actually, the other conferences here, I think it was DESE, right? The other conferences here, the state standards have changed in recent years, and so it's just there's more and more things that the health teacher needs to cover in these topics. Yeah, and oftentimes it's like the PE coach that doesn't want to do it anyway, and so they're more than happy to have us do it. But also, yes, there's plenty of administration that's contacting us and saying, we've got a problem with bullying, or yeah, teen pregnancy here. It's just like word of mouth that it's spread. A teacher tells another teacher in the other district. Yeah.
Do you give them some really practical tools?
We talk about the difference between deciding and sliding in a relationship. When people think about why they're dating to begin with, there's actually, I ask so many students, like, why are you dating? Or, like, what's the purpose of dating? And they're often not, first of all, often they're like kind of baffled by the question, like, what is the purpose of dating? Why am I dating, right? But that's like one of the, like, first check boxes that I think like makes someone mature enough to date is they've thought about why. We talk to the juniors and seniors about that, but deciding means that they're setting boundaries in the relationship and they're thinking ahead of time.
I've got it here. I'm glad I brought my whole, oh my goodness. You didn't think I was just being a flagpole today.
We talked to the juniors and seniors about the difference that if someone is trying to balance this and they're looking at the immediate future, it's going to be harder to balance it. But if they look at the top, if they look at their distant future, they're keeping that in mind, while still living in the moment, they can balance and keep track for the things that they want later on in life. And so we talk about the difference between thinking short-term and long-term. Yeah,
which, back to like the connection and consumption, like if someone is thinking short-term, they're going here, right?
Yeah, so helping people to think, or helping the students to think long-term, like engaging like prefrontal cortex, critical thinking there, talking about boundary setting, yeah. And we've got different specific activities to help with that, but.
Do
do you find that there's the pregnancy rates up in Northeast Missouri? I mean, is there any way to kind of gather if some of it's coming down? Or
It is. Slowly, though, and not in every county, but in most of the counties that we're in, it has dropped, which is really cool. I'm hoping that like our program can stick around for another 10, 15 years, that like we'll start to see parents who now have kids that are starting to go through our program, and it'll really take off, and maybe we'll work ourselves out of a job too at that point too, you know, but the rates haven't dropped yet. But the research is inconclusive about why. Well, one of the biggest variables we think, we're in these 20 minutes.
I recently read an article about differences that all of the gender things are making in the way people look at dating. Some of the boys in our youth group recently said it's easier for a girl to get a date with a girl than a guy. And, you know, that's what I mean, that has to make some effect here.
Yeah, the students are exposed to everything at any point in time. I mean, pull out your phone, like, endless options of choices for the rest of their lives. And yeah, so there's a lot of pressure. Even, like, I've got sixth graders asking me sometimes, like, is it okay if I'm gay? Or is it, it's like, man, I don't want you to feel the pressure to have to put yourself in this box. Like, one, we already just talked about how it's not healthy at this point to be sexually active. And so, like, do you have smart enough to put this pressure on yourself to identify right now?
Well, they were saying that, you know, issues with, like, anorexia and cutting and things like that was like a cry for help. And so some of these young kids are like, well, I don't know what I am. And that maybe it's a cry for help, but they're thinking it is something to embrace now. So it is confusing.
When people can belong in a group, they can put a label.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you find more that it might be not necessarily just a cry for help, but more like a protection mechanism, right? You know, of like, and it didn't always used to be that way. These used to be targeted groups, unfortunately, of hatred and bullying, and now it's almost protected groups of, well, if I can identify as this, then I can belong to something, and if I do get bullied, or, you know, then just sharing hatred or bigotry or whatever the case may be. Do you see that in your teenagers or kids that you work with, that it's more of just trying to belong to something rather than truly being conflicted with their own sexuality?
It's we're there for 3 days. We do see kids year to year, which is really cool, and they get excited about us sometimes. I mean, Ryan's a legend in Northeast Missouri. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, give this guy a raise, all the comments are. But to me, like, I try to see individuals in every class. It seems like it's different. Yes, that might be what's going on for some kids. That's like, yeah, I feel belonging, I feel actually now safer in this group or to identify, but I mean, yeah, there could be so. There's so many.
You made the point of, like, in the beginning that you wanted us all to feel worthy, and I think that's an important factor. I'm a youth leader, also work at the, you know, pregnancy care center, but as I see teens, and our actual youth group is a lot of homeschool kids, but you still see it there. And we've recently had a situation. It was a phone situation where, you know, somebody encouraged that person to text me something, and she went along with it because he told her she was beautiful, and she had never heard anybody tell her she was beautiful.
Right.
And so to encourage your kids to know that they're worthy, that they're enough, that they are valuable. And I mean, yesterday I wore a shirt that says you are enough, and it had the first loop where God knows when a sparrow falls, he knows every tear that we've ever cried. You are enough, and you are valuable, and you're worthy. So I think that is an important factor to put out there to our kids, boys and girls. And like I said, even the homeschool community is affected by society. And so
anytime I've asked a teacher, like, what's going on with this student, it's because that student is acting up, and I know their name. That's why I know names end up usually. It's like, well, if I know your name, it's probably not a good thing. But and like, I think
been every single time that teacher's telling me something about, yeah, their parents go to those like key switching parties where they swap in partners with other married couples, or they're saying, yeah, he had to switch schools because his dad's a superintendent there and something happened there and it was weird. So it's like family problems. Actually, we went to a conference, what was it called? Narme? Maybe? And we went to San Antonio this summer for a marriage conference. And there was quite a few people there from like state and local government agencies. Like the main message that I took away from all of it was that we have lots of different programs like siloed off in our country, like federally, for like food, like education, like public services trying to help people on the lower rungs of the socioeconomic ladder. They were saying that the undercurrent underneath all those silos, like all these programs need to start talking, because the main root between like all these issues coming up, like it can solve relationships. And so there are people in our government agencies that are now starting to see some of these things. Yeah.
Now earlier you gave the definition of the relationship as being exclusive and monogamous, that most people refer to that as marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do to bridge the gap between those people who think that you can have the connection and the relationship and the monogamous exclusivity without the marriage?
Yeah, so I'd say, what's the point? Because there are benefits to marriage. And we talk about what marriage is. So I ask students, like, what's the main difference, and for you all, too, like, what's the main difference between dating and marriage?
A commitment.
Commitment, yeah. Actually, at the marriage conference that we just went to this summer, I asked, his name is Brad Wilcox. Some of you might know that name. He does a lot of data analysis for these topics. I said, what is marriage, what's the variable for marriage that you're working with? Because there's so many other, like, what is it? Like, what does it mean? He said, commitment. That is what the variable is. And so, like, sometimes in the classroom, like, the students are saying, like, well, it's just a piece of paper, right? Or it's just a ring. I'm like, okay, yes, this is $20 at Walmart, okay? But, yeah, this doesn't mean much, but it's symbolic of a commitment. And I said very strong words. I was kind of terrified to say to May about like sickness and health for richer or for poorer. If someone is actually committed, they'll say those things. If not, they're not as committed as they say they are. And there's other benefits to marriage. It's like a tax break, too. There's no reason not to. If someone's 100% committed, I mean, right? If you're 100% committed, there's no reason not to.
Single moms to get more money,
yes,
if they don't get married. So marriage is actually not incentivized.
And divorce is expensive. So a lot of our clients are still married to somebody else,
but somebody
with this whoever else.
Right.
You know, because I can't afford a divorce.
That it's risky, yes.
Sometimes we'll talk to students because they'll see that, like, divorce being messy, so they think if they just live together, then there's not those problems.
Exactly.
But really, you just have to walk them through, though. A lot of those issues do come into play, though, because you have split utilities, split rent, things like that, split property. So if we can get them to see that, then sometimes I think that helps with that piece as well.
But then it all boils down to, if you focus on that initial relationship and making sure that that first relationship is the right relationship, and that you have, you know, that the right focus when you go into a relationship initially, then you don't have all that division. You don't have a divorce. You don't have the split, and it's focusing on teaching them to find the right commitment the first time.
Well, but we still have to work in our relationships too, though. There's a book that I got from Focus on the Family, one of their family life conferences. It was a marriage conference, and it's called His Needs, Her Needs, and it talks about the love bank, very similar to what you're talking about, and how it's this constant cycle we have, and one of us is always constantly trying to get the other one out of that, because everybody goes through it. We may have different levels that we're or severity of where we're hitting that empty tank, but it's learning about our partner and how we continuously fill their tank up, essentially, is like the love languages too.
Yeah.
So yes, it's about finding that right person and going into that relationship with longevity, but also understanding that it's not easy. We all have to work at that too. And I think some people just don't want to, they're just like, well, that's just too much work for me to do all that too.
We spend a lot of time talking about love in our curriculum too. Like we talk about in seventh grade, the difference between love and infatuation. And it's like the essence of it is truly caring about another person, right? And infatuation is more about like, how can this benefit me? And also like in our upper level curriculums, we talk about the four Greek words for love, philia, eros, agape, what's the other one, missing storage, or however you say it. But like agape, the essence of agape is unconditional love. By the way, like, you know, like this only actually makes sense because of Jesus. Right. At the end of the day, like, love does not make sense. It just doesn't. It's not, there's no kind of equation that works out where love is like, yeah, you should do this. Right? You should put yourself up for that risk.
Daily choice.
Yeah. Yeah, and really, too, like, the students will ask us a lot of personal questions, which is good, but like, my marriage is not about me. Like, my marriage is about my wife and my daughter now at this point, but also, like, my community. My marriage is about, like, Ryan, too. Like, it's so much bigger than just about us. And so I think that's, the focus that needs to shift is, like, back to love with some of these things. But I can't convince you that it makes sense.
I mean, we love because God loved first, so.
Right. Yeah, it only everything makes sense with Jesus. Yeah.
Do you feel like all this information comes better from a man teaching it or a woman? Like, what? Like, do you have a woman that teaches to you or
something? I skipped it.
Like, who do they end up connecting with?
So we try to in junior high send a girl to talk to the girls and a guy to talk to the guys.
Oh,
yeah, I skipped this part. So usually we are speaking to the guys' classes. In the high school classes, usually they just have them all together. But then, yeah, they're speaking to the girls' classes. And the teachers say that they respond better or that they ask more questions. If I'm talking to a group of guys, they're going to ask more questions to me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And vice versa.
I just heard, just when answering the phone at the pregnancy centers, there was a guy who does a dad's program. He said they've been getting more appointments when the guys answer the phone. So I found that interesting. For them personally, I don't know how it would go with all centers.
For like the fatherhood program?
For just answering the phone and getting appointments to come into the centers.
And maybe
when the guy answers the phone.
I was going to say, and if it's a young lady who's had experience of not having a dad in her life and they may feel that fatherly, if it's a kind voice, that can be that fatherly figure that everybody wants, and you know, which ultimately is Christ. But like,
I guess it all depends on the demeanor of the person on the phone.
Right.
We've kind of got a rule at our clinic that we're not supposed to be the first face or first contact.
Right.
Because oftentimes our clients have been abused or hurt or in some kind of abusive relationship. And so, like, there can be pros and cons to that. Yeah. I've never thought about what you're saying.
I never thought about
I will say, too, just I don't know if I said it specifically in the beginning. Our program is an SRA program. So we just got done with a grant through it. We're continuing on with this program still without the grant, but it's sexual risk avoidance. That is probably the best terminology at this point to be using rather than abstinence. That word means the same thing. It's like a rhetoric battle constantly, okay? But abstinence carries connotations with like, just say no, or you don't want syphilis, do you? So don't have sex. Like, when people hear the word abstinence, that's by and large what they think now. So it's sexual risk avoidance. And that's what we want. It's not like the message has like changed dramatically, but the language, the way that we talk about it is a little bit more nuanced maybe. Sexual risk avoidance. Also, another great resource that we lean to for a lot of things is Ascend. Like, lifting up Ascend. They've got a lot of great resources. So if you are considering one of these programs or you got one, just getting off the ground, Ascend.
I've heard you call it abstinence, or I've heard you call it sexual avoidance. So
yes.
What is the best term for
talking to our clients, what, instead of saying abstinence, which some of them know what it means, some of them don't, but
right.
negative connotations to them,
yeah.
what's a good phraseology for us to use?
We call it risk avoidance. So,
risk.
Yeah. And when sometimes students ask me, like, what does that mean? Like, I'm familiar with the term abstinence. We talk through how there's primary, secondary, tertiary, different levels of, like, medical intervention or prevention. Avoidance is at, like, a primary level, where some other programs that are maybe different that get government funding from the other perspective, they're more like a secondary prevention, because they have the mindset that, well, kids are going to have sex anyway, so let's just give them a condom and help them make it safer. When the stats are that actually it's decreasing every year. What is it? 27.4% of teens are sexually active in our country? So it's like, okay, most of them aren't having sex anyway. Let's go ahead and promote the highest health standard to them, like we do with drinking and drugs. Even like with food, like we promote the highest health standard. It's not that we're trying to shame anyone, but this is what's healthiest. And so, we say risk avoidance.
Yeah,
and that's trying to communicate the highest health standard. No, that's all I've got for you. If you've got other questions, you are more than welcome to stick around. We will be here for the next 10, 20 minutes.
Thank you so
much.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thank you. Very good.
Thank you.